This is the shape of Texas.
The Museum of Fine Arts in Houston is a single building with two contrasting facades. One is a stone temple of art that symbolizes tradition and authority. The other is a modern cage of steel and glass, a forum for bringing art to the city and the city to art. The Houston architect William Ward Watkin designed the earliest phases of the museum. The first opened in 1924, the second in 1926. He used Ionic columns and other classical elements that had identified buildings as art museums since the early 19th century. Classical columns symbolized the desire of Houston's elite to give their city the cultural amenities that they identified with more established cities. But by 1954, the next generation of the city's cultural elite sought to symbolize something new, Houston, the modern city. They turned to the German-born architect Ludwig Mies van der Rohe of Chicago to complete Watkin's building. Mies's approach was the opposite of Watkin's. He discarded stone columns for unadorned steel piers and girders. Instead of entombing art behind limestone walls, Mies created glass-walled galleries that, from the inside, put the surrounding city on display. Mies died in 1969, but his master plan for the museum was completed when the last phase opened in 1974. Mies tied his modern additions to Watkin's classical original so securely that the museum became not a patchwork of ill-joined pieces, but a whole. Mies respected the existing pattern of pedestrian routes of Watkin's building, so visitors moved smoothly between the two. At Houston's Museum of Fine Arts, Mies masterfully resolved the tension between old and new, and yet, just as masterfully, preserved the identity of each. When Spanish architect Rafael Maneo designed the newest building in Houston's Museum of Fine Arts complex, he demonstrated considerable restraint. From the outside, the $126 million Audrey Jones Beck building stands in the background and deliberately attracts little attention. The boxy building opened in the year 2000. It's named for the Houstonian who donated her collection of Impressionist art to the museum. Like the earlier buildings, the Beck is faced with Indiana limestone. The architect also used Dakota mahogany granite. The new building has 192,000 square feet, nearly half of that devoted to galleries. Visitors enter an immense atrium, and then they ascend escalators past standing classical statues to the upper floor. Here, the museum's permanent collection of European paintings is on display in a sequence of galleries with high ceilings and aligned entranceways. The architectural use of light is a major theme of the Audrey Jones Beck building. Maneo designed the rooftop skylights as rectangular lanterns with louvered glass. The louvers filter the light before it illuminates the galleries, the atrium, and the artwork below. At nightfall, the skylights glow like beacons. The artistic use of light also comes into play at the Beck building's other extreme. A 150-foot-long tunnel that runs under Main Street connects basement-level passageways in the Beck building and the original museum. The artist, James Terrell, outfitted the tunnel with a lighting installation that plays on the sensation of being underground. Light emanates from plexiglass screens at either end of the walkway and washes the walls. During a 20-minute cycle, the light changes from intense blue to red. The effect is deliberately disorienting. The floor is slightly recessed on either side of the walkway, and the walls appear to curve downward. Guards are stationed along the walkway to ensure that visitors don't lose their balance. Isamu Noguchi, the Japanese-American sculptor and designer, was 72 years old when he was commissioned, in 1976, to design the Lily and Hugh Roy Cullen Sculpture Garden at the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston. Inspiration for Noguchi's gardens began early in his career when he designed several playgrounds that were never built. Later, in the 1950s and 60s, he refined those designs into garden courts for office buildings. It took Noguchi 10 years to design and build the Cullen Sculpture Garden. He wanted to create a quiet, thoughtful space of human scale where the spirit could be renewed. The garden opened in 1986 and is named for local philanthropists. It's nearly an acre, and includes about 25 works from the museum's collection by renowned artists such as Alexander Calder, Henri Matisse, and Ellsworth Kelly. The sculptures engage in active dialogue with visitors, among themselves, and with the garden's earth mounds, walls, and plantings. Noguchi combined two traditions in his design, the viewing gardens of Zen monasteries and the pleasure gardens that people experience by walking through. He used mounds to activate the garden and push it into three dimensions off the flat Houston landscape. Concrete walls around the perimeter hold the mounds in place and also shield the garden from two streets and a parking lot. At the Cullen Sculpture Garden's inauguration, Noguchi said, "This place will be beautiful once nature takes over." Today, its mature plantings fully realize the artist's vision. "Only the sun can light sculpture," Noguchi said. His words ring true. Shadows from crepe myrtles, giant bamboo, pines, and water oaks move across the granite walks, grassy mounds, and sculptures throughout the day. Sometimes in full sun, sometimes in shadow. The garden never is the same. Bayou Bend in the River Oaks subdivision of Houston is a trip back in time. American time, that is. Visitors leave the 21st century in the parking lot, then walk across a swaying, wooden-decked bridge suspended between the overgrown banks of Buffalo Bayou. On the other side is a period piece of American life, a commanding pink stucco mansion on top of a rise. It overlooks formal gardens with a fountain dedicated to Diana, goddess of the hunt, set against an untamed background. The setting suggests the natural and the refined in balanced composition. Bayou Bend was the residence of Miss Ima Hogg, a Houston arts patron and noted collector of American decorative arts. It was designed by architect John F. Staub and completed in 1928. Staub refined Hogg's idea for a home into a central block with two symmetrical wings reflecting the English Georgian style. But also there are other influences. A portico with columns and a central hallway with a curving stairway borrow from Southern plantation design. A wrought iron balcony salvaged from New Orleans adds a Spanish Creole flavor. Hogg called the result Latin Colonial. In 1957, she donated Bayou Bend and her collection to the Museum of Fine Arts Houston. The mansion opened as a museum in 1966. Its 28 period rooms include thousands of decorative items. Tours begin in a room that recreates the 1620s, then continue through the evolution of American style, from colonial interiors to the post-Civil War era of the 1870s. Pewter spoons give way to refined silverware. Rough stone fireplaces become classically inspired mantels. Rustic pewter cups are replaced by raspberry-colored cut glass displayed in windows to reflect light. Indeed, Bayou Bend tells a story of a young America struggling to become a prospering nation with a heritage of its own. In 1948, seven Houston residents created the Contemporary Arts Museum, dedicated to presenting the best of current art to a local audience. It had neither a permanent art collection nor a building. Instead, the museum organized exhibits at various locations until 1950, when it moved into a small space of its own. In 1972, the museum was ready to build a permanent home in Houston's emerging museum district. Gunnar Burkitz and Associates with Charles Tapley designed the building as a contemporary sculpture, a silver parallelogram perched on a concrete plinth. Exterior walls of the two-story museum are clad in corrugated stainless steel panels that shine brightly in the sun. The abstract shape and materials have no classical references to the past. There are no columns or beams in wood, stone, or steel. Instead, the building always feels like now, an appropriate response for an institution dedicated to art that's new. The south and east walls stand apart, creating a slot that leads to the front door, a subtle gesture that sometimes left visitors wondering how to get inside. The main exhibit space is a single loft-like room without windows. It's the perfect black box, ready to exhibit contemporary paintings, sculptures, films, and any other art of our time. In 1997, Stern and Associates transformed basement offices into three new gallery spaces. Light filters through the original ribbon windows at ground level. The architects designed a white triangular awning to mark the front door. They also added a fountain and a garden that link the museum to the Cullen Sculpture Garden across the street. The idea of creating a permanent location to exhibit the changing world of contemporary art required a timeless design. The Contemporary Arts Museum in Houston maintains its sense of the present by claiming no time at all.
What makes the Menil Collection in Houston so unusual? First, the museum stands in a residential area amid one-story bungalows with large front porches. Second, its design and construction reflect the surrounding Montrose neighborhood southwest of downtown. Like its 1920s-era neighbors, the graceful 400-foot-long museum is surfaced with clapboards painted gray with white trim. The effect is so subtle, it almost escapes attention. Subtle yet profound transformations appeal to Dominique de Menil, the late Houston arts patron and philanthropist. Beginning in the 1960s, she and her husband John bought six blocks in Montrose. They planned to build a museum there for their collection of modern and indigenous art and antiquities. Houston architect Howard Barnstone suggested painting the houses in these blocks gray with white trim to mimic Gray is the Color, an exhibition Dominique helped organize. John died in 1973, leaving his wife to pursue the couple's museum plans. Dominique later asked the Italian architect Renzo Piano to design a structure that would respect the neighborhood's character. Piano didn't try to make the museum look like a house, but he acknowledged its setting. He faced the building's exteriors with cypress clapboards, and he adopted Barnstone's color scheme. He surrounded the museum with a porch-like portico, roofed with curved louvers to filter the sun. Within this roof canopy, he combined skylights, electrical lighting, and air conditioning ducts to keep the gallery spaces flexible. The $25 million museum opened in 1987. It took vision to defer to the Menil's ordinary setting, especially in Houston, where entire neighborhoods are regularly scrapped for replacement. Renzo Piano and Dominique de Menil understood that the ordinary was a potent source of inspiration. The American Institute of Architects honored the Menil Collection's design in 1988.
In the 1970s, architects and museum curators turned away from electric lighting and returned to the 19th century practice of lighting paintings and sculpture with natural light from above. Skylight can be more even throughout the day than light from windows, which changes with the movement of the sun. Dominique de Menil, the Houston art collector and philanthropist, commissioned three skylighted buildings to house her collection of paintings and sculpture: the Rothko Chapel, the Menil Collection Museum, and in 1992, a gallery for more than 30 works by the late artist Cy Twombly, a painter and sculptor. His abstract paintings are large, yet intimate, with references to literature and to his travels abroad. Italian architect Renzo Piano designed the 12,000-square-foot Twombly Gallery in the shape of a simple square. It's clad in a grid of cast stone blocks that's broken only by massive concrete architraves, moldings that hold the glass doors and windows. The building looks as if it will last through the ages. To ensure that the paintings also will last, the architect buffered their exposure to the sun while letting the light in to spill down on the art. To accomplish that, Piano used a four-level buffer. A metal parasol of louvers shades the steel-framed glass roof, which blocks ultraviolet rays. Under the glass, there's another set of louvers that are electronically adjusted to maintain a constant light level in the galleries below. To block this visual clutter, a white cotton fabric scrim is tightly stretched to form a flat ceiling that glows with skylight. The buttery smooth plaster walls of the galleries have no texture to cast small shadows. It's another detail that focuses attention on the paintings and not on the building, which becomes a mechanism for exhibiting and preserving art. For a small Central Texas town, Gonzales is big on history, and not just for its war heroes, stately homes, and picturesque churches. True, the first skirmish of the Texas Revolution was fought here in 1835, but another measure of devotion to the past is a building that citizens usually want to forget, the county jail. This sturdy structure made that hard to do, despite its grim history, including three hangings. The 1887 jail is no institutional box, but a handsome brick three-story with two graceful wings and 96 tall windows. It stands on Courthouse Square, the central of seven town squares that form a cross. It cost $21,000. Critics called it a $50 saddle on a $15 horse. It's beige, but not bland. Houston architect Eugene T. Heiner gave it an Italianate styling, crowned windows, bracketed cornices under the eaves, and a steep mansard roof. Eventually, the roof was flattened and surrounded by a low parapet. The windows march across the facade in precise rows, broken by arches above and red brick panels below. When a new jail was built in 1975, the Gonzales County Historical Commission and Chamber of Commerce took over the old one. They spruced it up after shoveling out the pigeon droppings and returned it to service as the old jail museum. Downstairs, it showcases sheriff's badges, period weaponry, a massive ball and chain used on prison work gangs, and a wanted poster for the outlaw John Wesley Hardin. Upstairs are the cells and the gallows, a recreation of the original, last used in 1921. Restoration began in 2001 to weatherproof the exterior. When more funds are raised, the old jail museum in Gonzales will be refurbished and dedicated to telling stories about rural law enforcement in the era of gunslingers and cattle drives.
When New York architect François de Menil designed the Byzantine Fresco Chapel Museum in Houston, he created a structure to protect restored 13th century frescoes from heat, humidity, and direct sunlight. He built with concrete, glass, and steel. The $4 million museum also is constructed with elements of intrigue. In 1983, François's mother, the late arts patron Dominique de Menil, learned that two ceiling frescoes, one depicting Christ, the other the Virgin Mary with the archangels Gabriel and Michael, had been cut into 38 pieces, smuggled from a chapel in Cyprus, and offered for sale. The Cypriot Church and Republic permitted Dominique to pay $1 million for the fragments' ransom and restoration. The church gave her the frescoes on extended loan. Dominique commissioned François to build a sacred, contemplative space to house them. The 4,000-square-foot museum sits in secular surroundings on a quiet street in Montrose, one block from the Menil collection. François modeled the museum on a reliquary, a box used to hold fragments of religious significance. He used a poured-in-place concrete cube with stone facing on the outside. Inside, the perimeter is lit by skylights, which separates the walls from the ceiling. Within the cube, sandblasted glass is suspended from steel braces. It is artificially lit and appears to float between the ceiling and floor, becoming the ghost of the original stone chapel. Benches accommodate visitors on three sides before the altar. The outer walls vanish in the darkness, and the brilliant purples, blues, and gold leaf of the frescoes appear magically in the apse and dome above. The project has received design awards from the American Institute of Architects, the Texas Society of Architects, and the New York State Association of Architects.
The Children's Museum of Houston is a bright yellow beacon of youthful exuberance. Its giant building block shapes and bold colors and patterns seem to say, "Look at me." The other denizens of the museum district probably wish they could tell this rambunctious upstart to stop showing off, but the Children's Museum can't keep quiet or act grown-up. No doubt, that's what its designer intended. Architect Robert Venturi of Philadelphia didn't stint on his brash, larger-than-life style just because the Children's Museum is relatively small or because it had a limited budget of only $3.8 million. Instead, the 43,000-square-foot structure, built in 1992, is vintage Venturi, a clever mix of classical architectural features, cartoonishly oversized and playfully reinvented. From blocks away, visitors quickly spot the entrance, awash in the dazzling hue of noonday sun. Four jumbo columns support an imposing triangular pediment, just as one might expect of a grand museum entrance. Only here, these elements are rendered in crayon box colors, with contrasting patterns, curved upends, and the simple legend, Museum, in vast red letters. One side of the building echoes the yellow stucco and columns of its portico. The other, fashioned of green corrugated metal siding, reveals more of Venturi's architectural wit, Holding up the covered walkway that runs its length are 13 colorful fiberglass cutouts of children dubbed caryatids. They're a takeoff on caryatids, the female forms used in classical buildings. Live children are drawn to them, dancing between the multi-ethnic figures and imitating their raised arms stance. Like the museum's exaggerated scale and rainbow facades, the caryatids clearly declare the purpose of the edifice to be discovery, wonderment, and unfettered fun. A soaring, transparent addition to the Houston Museum of Natural Science shelters the Cockerel Butterfly Center, a small slice of Central American rainforest. Within its misty confines, 1,500 brilliantly hued butterflies flutter freely among tropical plants and among bemused visitors. The center opened in 1994, and it's almost as dazzling as the butterflies within. The see-through structure was designed by 3D International. It is built with nearly 600 panels of framed glass, which form a 70-foot-tall truncated cone cut at a diagonal. This futuristic glass and steel container protects the fragile environment inside and showcases it even to passing traffic. Its southwestern exposure captures a maximum of sunlight, which spurs plant growth and lengthens the time that butterflies fly. Visitors dodge hanging stalactites as they enter the Butterfly Center through a dim, cave-like portal. A waterfall thunders from 40 feet above into a stone replica of a Mayan sacred well. A few steps away, a curving staircase leads to a bath of sunlight. Overhead, mahogany, palms, and twisty liana vines create pockets of shadow along winding paths bordered with ferns, orchid, and prayer plants. Giant blue morphous butterflies, dainty zebra-striped rice paper butterflies, and a myriad of others mingle with the vegetation, feasting on flower nectar and upon ripe fruit. The butterflies are raised on site and represent 60 species from Asia and the Americas. To the delight of visitors, the delicate creatures often catch a ride on brightly colored church leaves. Another stairway ascends to the highest level of the center, where visitors look down on the splendid scene before leaving, and always checking first for stowaways. The Holocaust Museum, Houston, is an ominous-looking building set in a quiet residential area of the city's museum district. It's a giant wedge, a three-dimensional triangle constructed of gray concrete. At the low end of the angled roof plane, a thick, dark brick cylinder emerges. It suggests the smokestacks of incinerators at the World War II death camps where 6 million European Jews were killed. The $3 million museum opened in 1996. It's compact, 18,000 square feet that include a main gallery, changing exhibitions gallery, library, memorial room, and outdoor memorial garden. The wedge and tower are additions to a one-story brick building constructed in the 1960s as a medical clinic. Visitors enter the museum alongside the wedge, where it begins to rise. New York designer Ralph Applebaum Associates and Houston architect Mark S. Mukasey made the main gallery emotionally compelling. The narrative architecture of the exhibit chain and the use of contrast of light and darkness emphasize the pathos of the images and documents that tell the Holocaust story. The architecture propels visitors through the permanent installation titled Bearing Witness, A Community Remembered. At the gallery's entrance, the ceiling ascends. Here, panels containing images and text introduce the history of the Jewish people. The panels are mounted on stark black steel trusses. They're arranged to force visitors to make a U-turn. Now the gallery ceiling descends as the story of the Holocaust unfolds. It focuses on the extermination of European Jews by the Nazis during the early 1940s. The exhibit ends at a small theater set within the tower. Here, on video, Houston Holocaust survivors talk about the horror and their hope. Rabbi Leo Haim.
Bitterness does not restore humanity. Viciousness only intensifies viciousness. A bit of sincerity and compassion is what this troubled world needs desperately.
For The Shape of Texas, produced by South Texas Public Broadcasting, I'm Bill Clough. Funding is provided by Texas Architect Magazine and the Texas Society of Architects at texasarchitect.org.